The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. You know, today's show is going to come as a surprise to many of our listeners. This show is all about, wait for it, retirement planning and its importance in helping you reach your retirement goals. And once reached, how to maintain your lifestyle from the beginning to the end. And what we do here is cover a wealth of subjects on retirement, from investments and health to how to understand your government benefits from Social Security to Medicare. And what we have done just recently is we just completed a series of programs on Social Security and how to maximize your benefits. So imagine our surprise when we uncovered this week that most of what we have covered here over the last few months just got changed if this new budget bill gets passed. So throw it all away, right, Jim?
That's pretty much it. I'm just absolutely blown away. It kind of reminds me, it's one of those things that you don't hear too much other than the fact that they were coming to an agreement, but you didn't hear a lot of details. Thank goodness there are people fact-checking these bills, because most of these guys don't even read them and they're forced to sign them. But John, what we're seeing coming out of this budget bill is probably the most sweeping change to Social Security in over three decades. It is that sweeping in scope, and it could cost the average couple $50,000 in Social Security benefits. It's that sweeping. That's the thing that really struck me about this. I mean, the last time we reformed Social Security was back under President Reagan in 1983. And there are a number of things that were put in place back then to make Social Security, or put it on a sound basis. We'll talk later on about that. But normally when you talk about something this sweeping that's going to affect 8 to 10 million Americans, you would think we would hear more about it in the financial press. There would be a debate. John, there was none of this. This just kind of popped out there and really took a lot of us by surprise. I mean, we knew that there are changes coming to Social Security, and we'll talk about some of the other ones, I think, that are coming down the road. But John, something like this just out of the blue just blew me away.
Well, you have to remember, if we go all the way back to the beginning of the new century here, everyone was telling us there wasn't a problem with Medicare or Social Security, blah, 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 blah. So I'm wondering, what brought this about? Why haven't we heard much about this? You would think this was something that everybody would be interested in. Very few people knew anything about the 52% possible Medicare jump in premiums that could take place this January.
I think, like much of what takes place in Washington, John, the bills are passed at the last minute, with most congressmen unaware of the details contained in the bill. Remember the famous speech given by Nancy Pelosi on Obamacare? You have to pass it to find out what's in it. Unfortunately, that's what's happening in Washington more and more frequently, is they sort of kind of knock heads. Hey, you know, I'm not going to vote for this unless I get my way. The other side says the same thing. They go back and forth and the media picks up on it. And then all of a sudden you get down to the last minute and all of a sudden something is passed in the wee hours of the morning, and they come up with a compromise. John, you remember the sequester, you know, the debt ceiling debate? The bill was reached at 3 a.m, and all of this stuff happens at the last minute. And unfortunately, that's what's happening. And the good thing is there are watchdogs out there that now watch and read through this army of people that go through these bills. But basically, there's very few people in the government media talking about this.
Well, I wonder why the abrupt change. I mean, there's no debate, at least not public debate, because you can't tell me that this suddenly occurred behind the scenes with nobody planning on this thing, or we would have heard about it, as a matter of fact. It just seems to be jumping above the radar, and in the public media, it's not being discussed very much.
Well, the problem is the Disability Trust Fund is going to go broke at the end of 2016. And also Medicare will follow soon after. Basically, if they didn't do a temporary fix soon, Congress needed to do something because basically the disability trust fund is out of money. So they needed to do a Band-Aid and get this one behind them because, well, John, what are we in? We're in the middle of a presidential campaign, and also all of Congress, or at least the House, the entire House, and one-third the Senate, is up for re-election next year. So they didn't want 30% of Medicare beneficiaries facing a 52% increase in premiums, nor do they want 11 million Americans on disability to see their benefits cut to only 80% of this year's benefit. So they needed a quick fix to get them through the election season. Of course, we've covered that 52% increase that would go into effect in January 1st. And unless there was a fix, that was what was going to happen to 8 million Americans in this one, which I knew disability was in trouble. I thought it was a lot later, but apparently the trust fund is out of money by the end of 2016, the government's fiscal year, which would be next September. So they had to do something because they didn't want to have something like this be part of the media debates and television news every single night in September of next year, 2 months before a presidential election. So that's why I think there was a rush to get this done.
Okay, well, instead of keeping people in suspense here, let's get into the details of what is happening as we watch it. Who does this impact? And then what are the particulars if it's going to be this much of a radical change?
First, let's talk about some of the good news that came out. At least there are a few good points about this. The first one, it staves off 52% of the premium hikes that are going to hit 8 million new Medicare enrollees to Part B next year. So there's no more 52% increase, at least for next year. It also prevents that 20% cut in disability payments, which would result in the drying up of the trust fund. So I want to point out this only staves off the problem for Medicare until after the election of next year. Like it or not, as we've talked about on this program, Medicare premiums are going to go up by 100% by the year 2019, all the way from the low end to those making more money on the high end. And basically, if they don't do something, Medicare is going to go broke. So this is just, in many ways, John, a short-term Band-Aid to get them through the election season. So that's the good news. So if you're still working, turning age 65, you can apply for Medicare without worrying about seeing your premiums go up 52%. And if you're on disability right now, you're safe at least for another good year.
Well, that was the good news. I'm holding my breath. What's the bad news?
Well, brace yourself because there are a series of them. Let's begin with the first one. In 6 months, benefits now being received by some spouses, ex-spouses, or parent who has suspended his or her benefit are going to be eliminated until that worker restarts his or her retirement benefits. You know, the thing that really struck me about this, I've never heard of a change this dramatic in Social Security law that eliminates benefits for people already collecting, but that is what is in this bill. And what this is going to do is going to induce those who have suspended their benefits. That's the file and suspend. You're doing that because you want your benefits to grow and you want your spouse to get something in between. What this is going to do is induce those who have done this, hoping to get a higher benefit at age 70, to restart their benefits in order to maintain their family's immediate living standards. So this is going to change dramatically a lot of individuals who have employed these strategies.
Well, what else did they change? I mean, I imagine there's more to this bill to label it sweeping, as many people are now calling it.
The second thing in the bill does is it extends the word deeming. Now, I'm going to have to take some time to explain that, which now ends at full retirement age at age 66, and they're going to extend that through age 70. Deeming is the requirement that if A, you take your retirement benefit and are eligible to collect your spousal benefit, you are forced to take both at once. And B, if you take your spousal benefit, you are forced to simultaneously take your retirement benefit. Now, since Social Security effectively only pays the larger of the two benefits, being forced to take both benefits at once means that you lose one of those two benefits in the option to grow that. So this is another thing that's going into effect. And as we get in later on, I'm going to tell you what's more I think is coming down the road.
It seems like what they're doing to try to balance things is going after the file and suspend and file and restrict strategies. And we've discussed those at length here on the program. Now, all of this is being upended.
Yeah, that's exactly what they just did. Under the current law, if the higher earning spouse does something called file and suspend, his spouse is eligible to get 50% of the higher earning spouse's benefit. They could then file and restrict for themselves, allowing their own benefit to grow at 8% until age 70, at which time the spouse could opt for a change of the larger of two benefits. If their spousal benefit was larger, they could simply stick with it. If their own benefits, which would accrue at 8% a year after age 66, were larger, they can then switch over to their own spousal benefits. These strategies, now here's a key point. These strategies are going to end in 6 months. So there's still a window of time in which to pursue these strategies. So, you know, if you want to do it, you've got a 6-month time frame to execute this strategy, but only during this 6-month period of time, because after that, it is not going to work. And they were interviewing one Social Security couple that were in the process of doing this. And their comment to PBS is, we've been paying 12.4% of our income to Social Security since our first job in exchange for a variety of benefits. Now, with a couple of sentences, our government is reining in on what, for many households, could amount up to $50,000 in lifetime benefits. Actually, that number is much larger. If you employ file and suspend and file and restrict, in many cases, depending on your income, John, that benefit could be adding up to several hundred thousand dollars. So essentially, this law wipes out a major inflation hedge for many retired worried about, you know, one of the issues we talk about here is longevity and outliving their assets. By either employing file and suspend or file and restrict, you would have those benefits grow at 8% a year. So at least you had some kind of inflation hedge down the road that you could rely on, especially when you get into your 70s, when your medical expenses are much more likely to start growing at a more rapid pace.
It seems like this is going to force a lot of cash-constrained households to file for their benefits earlier than they had hoped to do. I mean, it looks like to me that they lose most or all, it depends, we're trying to read through this here, of their spousal benefits. And the irony of this bill, but it doesn't surprise me, is that it's called the Protecting Social Security Benefits Bill, which, as we've been saying for years, the bills almost always do the opposite of what it is they say, because in effect, it makes retirement more precarious for literally millions of retirees.
And here's another key issue, John. We did a show on Social Security and Medicare, and most women have lower benefits because a couple of reasons. They are out of the workforce because they were raising kids. Maybe they got started later. Their incomes are less than their husbands. So this is really going to impact working women or divorced women, assuming you were married for at least 10 years, or who earn much less than, let's say, their husbands. Under the file and suspend and file and restrict strategies, they could allow their own benefits from Social Security to grow at an 8% rate each year until age 70, at which time there was a possibility or a chance that they could either look at their own benefits at that time or their spousal benefits they were currently receiving, and they could switch to whichever was larger, which means, John, if they work, the extra contributions would lead to greater benefits down the road. Now, if they are cash constrained, they're going to be forced to take their retirement benefit earlier. And if they choose spousal benefits, if larger at the time, they will end up getting nothing in return for every dollar of taxes they paid to Social Security over their lifetime. And it's amazing when you take a look at this. And there are a lot of analysts that have come out and they said, you know, they're concerned about this bill because it could affect, let's say, income sharing and power plays in a marriage. I mean, take the case of a wife who earned very little because she stayed at home to, let's say, raise children. Now, assuming just for simplicity, her husband is the same age. If her working husband refused to take his retirement benefit before age 70 because he doesn't want to receive a permanently lower benefit, the wife will have to wait to age 70 to collect her spousal benefit. In other words, the file and suspend no longer gives her 50% of her husband's benefit. That means she'll receive no income in her own name from Social Security until she reaches age 70. And if this bill is passed, the people are going to see their Social Security checks disappear in 6 months, John, are primarily women.
That's going to go over really well at the polls. This should be interesting to see it happen. So, to summarize this new budget crisis right now, Social Security benefits for many of those who are now collecting, there will be drastic cuts in benefits for many who are about to collect. So many of these changes will particularly hurt the middle class, women, and families with disabled children.
You know, we've warned over the years and recently major changes were coming to entitlements. If they don't reform the system, John, quite honestly, is going to crash and go broke, just like disability would be broke at the end of next September. The system wasn't really designed for the extension of lifespans that we see today. I mean, when Social Security was put into effect in 1933, most people were expected, men were expected to live, life expectancy was age 65. Today, that life expectancy is age 76. Women are in their 80s. So the unfortunate thing, too, is we're also running against demographics. In 1933, there were 16 workers supporting every one beneficiary of Social Security benefits. That ratio today has fallen to 3-1. So if they don't make these changes, they're going to go broke. And unfortunately, the fixes in the system that were put in place in 1983, where they raised Social Security taxes and raised the base on which Social Security taxes were assessed and indexed it to a special inflation rate, that was supposed to keep Social Security solvent. Unfortunately, they squandered it. The surpluses were spent. And folks, there is no trust fund. There's only IOUs.
Yeah, that point came up in the Republican debate this week with the Governor Chris Christie from New Jersey when he said,
I mean, let me be honest with the people who are watching at home. The government has lied to you and they have stolen from you. They told you that your Social Security money is in a trust fund. All that's in that trust fund is a pile of IOUs for money they've spent on something else a long time ago. And they've stolen from you because now they know they cannot pay these benefits because Social Security is going to be insolvent in 7 to 8 years. We're sitting up here talking about all these other things. 71% of federal spending today is on entitlements and debt service, and that's with 0% interest rates. Now, I'm the only person who has put out a detailed plan on how to deal with entitlements, and it'll save $1 trillion over the next 10 years. And here's the difference between me and Hillary Clinton. What Hillary Clinton's going to say and has said before is she wants to raise Social Security taxes. Now, let me ask you a question, everybody. And this is for, you know, the guy who owns a landscaping business out there. If somebody's already stolen money from you, are you going to give them more? Or are you going to deal with the problem by saying, I'm going to give people who have done well in this country less benefits on the back end? We need to get realistic about this. We're not. The American people, forget about anything else. They've already been lied to and stolen from.
Well, now that's interesting, Jim, because if you remember when President Bush, and I think it was 2005, State of the Union message said Social Security was going to be in trouble, he was roundly booed in the Congress. And what a radical change we've come through in just about 10 years. So what strategies still work? Let's get back to the individual, because the national event is just going to roll forward the way it will roll forward. But what can we do right here? Like, can you still work and allow Social Security benefits to accumulate until age 70, and that results in higher benefits for a surviving spouse? Can you still work and collect benefits at age 66? Although I can see that may be another one they try to take away. So what then are things you can still do And what just happened in this bill emphasizes a point we make on this show. You better have a retirement plan because Medicare is going to cost you a lot more money, and many of your government benefits are going to be reduced, eliminated, or in some cases cost you just a whole lot more. And this is going to be an ongoing changing event due to the situation inside of Social Security.
Well, you know, there's still the advantage of higher benefits for a surviving spouse. If, depending on your income, once again, if you're not cash constrained, you can still basically postpone getting your Social Security benefits at full retirement age at 66, in which case they would grow 8% a year to age 70. That's still in effect. And that would provide a larger surviving benefit to your spouse, who is more likely to survive you. You also can still work once you reach, let's say, full retirement benefits at age 66. You can file for your Social Security benefits, get them, and not get penalized if you have a job. However, John, that may be another one they take away. Now, the way it used to work, if you filed for Social Security between ages 62 and 65, I think it was for every $3 you made, or I forget what the numbers were, they would subtract a dollar of your Social Security benefit. And then from age 65 to age 70, they would subtract less. Well, they changed that in 2000, basically said, look, once you reach Social Security age of 66, you know, you can work and we're not going to penalize you. I could see them coming after that. And, you know, when you have both Republicans and Democrats talking about the same thing, you know, down the road that is coming somewhere between 2017 and 2019, because the beginning of 2020, I think it's 2022 or 2023, Social Security begins to run out of money. So you've had Social Security Disability Fund runs out of money next September. You've got Medicare running out of money in 3 or 4 years, and you've got Social Security running out of money in about 7 or 8 years. So you know this is coming down the road. And, you know, given what's just happened, and this bill emphasizes a point we make on this show, you better have a retirement plan because Medicare is going to cost you a lot more, over 100% in the next 4 years, and many of your government benefits are going to be either reduced or eliminated in some cases, or cost you a whole lot of money.
It's time to look at our case study for the week. There's always hope and a bright ray on the horizon. Our case studies are based on real life events, but we change the names of the people to protect their privacy. So what's the case and who are the people?
This week, we're going to talk about Joe and Irene Turner. Joe is age 70, retired 5 years ago. He was an engineer for a defense contractor. Irene's wife, 65, retired, worked 15 years as a secretary for a law firm. Now, here's the issue that we came across, and one of the reasons they wanted a plan. Both Joe and Irene, excellent health with longevity on both sides of the family. Joe's parents both lived into their late 80s, and Irene's mother is still going strong at age 80. But now living in a retirement home, so long-term care was a planning issue for both Joe and Irene. So now let's take a look at some of the financial issues that we had to deal with. Now, the Turners had a budget, and as many of you know, listening on the program, we always try to take budgets and break them down into basic necessities and a bucket list. Their basic necessities were roughly about $90,000 a year. The bucket list mainly traveled $20,000, so their entire budget was $110,000 a year. Joe's Social Security, roughly about $2,500. Irene's was half of that at $1,250. Joe's pension was $3,750. So total pension income was about $7,250. Now, their hobbies, golf, skiing, travel, loved fine wines. Their home and RV, roughly about a townhouse worth about $450,000. They had a $200,000 mortgage on it. And they also, because of their love and skiing, they had a condo in Mammoth, a little over $300,000 with a $100,000 mortgage. So between the condo and RV, the condo in Mammoth, there was about $800,000. Joe's IRA, roughly about $250,000. Irene's roughly about $100,000. And they had several bank accounts, not much more than $50,000 in cash. Total about $400,000. They had about $300,000 in debt. One of the things that they were concerned about, what we suggested is combine the home mortgage and second, to buy the mammoth condo. That was one option. And the other thing they had was basically their three kids, two daughters, one son, all over the country. And, you know, when we talked about it, I go, you only ski a couple weeks out of the year. Does it justify the payments you're making on a condo of $300,000? I mean, that house payment was $100,000, $506 a month with taxes and maintenance. So it added up quite a bit. So we talked about a number of solutions. And what we did is, top of the list, the problem they were running into is they were dipping into principal to pay for travel expenses of $20,000 a year. And they were also drawing down the bank account. I mean, they used to have more, but, you know, the other thing too, as Joe complained, they don't get much on the bank. Roughly, they were getting about 0.5%. And they were drawing down the bank account. So the plan was originally to draw down the cash to pay for trips. The unfortunate thing, they only have about 2.5 years left in their bank account. We made a couple suggestions. Look, you only ski a couple weeks out of the year. Sell the condo. The kids are all over the country. It's not like they're at home and you took the family vacation to go skiing up there during the Christmas holidays. That would free up about $200,000 in cash. It would also cut over $1,000 a month from the budget. And that expense alone would pay for over half of their travel expenses. The other thing we looked at is they had two long-term care policies, one for Joe and Irene, that was costing them about $6,300 a year. Now, over their life expectancy of 25 years, that's $160,000. What we did is, after they sold the condo, we recommended that we have separate annuities, one on Joe and one on Irene, that we would convert to a 5-year certain, which would pay more than $5,000 a month if any one of them had to go into a long-term care facility. On the other hand, if none of them had to go into a long-term care facility, the annuity would go to the surviving spouse and would provide an income stream to the survivor. And so basically, we took the cash from the condo. I mean, you know, basically, it's much cheaper, as we explained to them, in your overall travel expenses, you know, to just go up there and rent a hotel up there for a couple of weeks to go skiing rather than to maintain a condo. And especially now with the kids dispersed all over the country, it just didn't make sense. They didn't use it as much as they did, let's say, when the kids were living at home. So we cut the budget by $1,000 a month. In addition, we used that equity, took care of the long-term care. That eliminated a little over $6,300 a year, plus probably about closer to $15,000 to $18,000 when you take a look at property taxes and the payment on the condo. And on the investment side, the problem with the Turners, as many people got shocked in the downturn in the economy and the markets. Joe retired in 2008 in the middle of the credit crisis. Fortunate, he had a good pension and a 401k program. Irene retired basically at the same time. Basically, what we did is we divided the IRAs roughly 50-50, half in laddered bonds at roughly 4%, and then blue chip stocks with the other half, roughly about 3%. The bonds would produce $8,000 worth of income. The stocks would produce $6,000 worth of income. That's $14,000 a year. Add that to their pensions. That would give them $101,000. And now, basically, their budget was cut down to $70,000, $20,000 for travel. That's $90,000 a year. That would leave them with about $11,000 in surplus income, which they could use to start building back up their savings. And also, you know, the $200,000 in dividend paying stocks would increase dividends anywhere from 5 to 8% a year. So at least they would have some kind of inflation protection. And more importantly, they had annuities, because nobody knows, number one, how long you're going to live, how you leave this world, whether it's a sudden illness that takes you or it's an extended illness where you're in a retirement facility. So at least by having the annuities, we could either use them to support a surviving spouse. Because remember, folks, what happens when one spouse passes away, the surviving spouse only gets one Social Security check. Usually it's the wife, and she can either take her own benefit, more likely her husband's benefit. But if she takes her husband's benefit, she loses her own income. So there would be a dramatic change. At least with the annuities accumulating, we could take care of long-term care. We'd also have some investment income down the road in case we needed it.
So to put together a checklist of what we did here for them, first of all, we reduced their expenses and debt, and that was done largely through a condo sale, which really only made sense, like you said. You know, for what you're paying on the regular upkeep of a condo, you can either hotel or rent a condo for a short amount of time for a lot less money. Long-term care annuities and long-term spare income. And then number three gave them a predictable and stable income with laddered bonds and blue chip dividend paying stocks. So it's successful. Usually these problems will resolve themselves if you just take a little time and take a look at them. What really flabbergasts, well, it does flabbergast me and it doesn't, Jim. I'll tell you why. Number one, you and I have known that the changes that we've seen in Social Security, when we were talking about this earlier, we've known that these had to come. Let's face it, we've known they've had to come because just the math warred against it, no matter what the politicians were saying. Now the concept that, well, Social Security and Medicare may be in trouble, that's breaking above the surface again here in this debate. But if you've noticed, Congress is already recognizing that. They're already making changes. And frankly, I think they hope nobody will notice until somebody wonders what's up. But of course, sooner or later, if you're a Social Security recipient and suddenly something changes, you're going to notice. And there's going to be a response to that and probably an angry response to Congress people. But that is basically what Chris Christie and Governor Mike Huckabee both said is, you've promised these people all this stuff and you can't deliver it because you've spent it. And that's the day when Mother Hubbard's cupboard runs bare. And that's what they're trying to stave off. And that, Jim, is right in the middle of a $18 trillion, 20 by the time the 2016 elections get done and we have a new president. It's going to be an interesting time, but we've seen this coming. They had a chance to fix this. You remember this back in the 90s? They had a chance to deal with it, but it was one of those footballs that nobody let them touch.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the one thing, whether it was the 52% increase in Medicare premiums going into effect January or the 20% cut in disability payments, no politician wanted any of that to take place right in the middle of a presidential election cycle or a congressional election cycle. So, John, all they did really was buy themselves some time because these issues are going to come back because Medicare is going to run into problems in the next 4 years. That's one reason we talked on an earlier program why premiums are going up over 100%. And Social Security is in trouble in the beginning of the next decade. So, you know, I think quite honestly what we're going to see the next one come is at age 66, if you collect your Social Security and you're still working, you're not going to get it. They'll go back to the old system where they would phase it out for so many dollars you'd earn over a certain limit. I think that's coming next. I also think they're going to extend the Social Security age probably to 69 or probably end up 70 because, quite honestly, people are living longer. The system simply was not designed for longevity, number one, and the demographics in this country are working against it. We no longer have 16-to-1 workers supporting the system. We're down to 3-to-1. And simply, folks, it's a matter of math. I don't care what anybody on the stump is telling you or how much they lie to you. It gets down to mathematics. And when you don't have the money, you don't have the money. And if you don't have the tax base to support it with fewer workers, you're going to have to make some alterations. And it's coming.
Well, enough of that. Coming up on our program tomorrow, remember that lifetime income spans 2 days. Diane Gosworth, who will be discussing Medigap policy. So you don't want to miss that one coming up tomorrow. And Jim?
You know, the amazing thing about this is every year I always have to take continuing education. I'm required 30 hours of education. In the beginning of the year, I took a course, 500 pages on Social Security and Medicare. And you learn all this stuff. And John, basically two paragraphs in a bill just changed everything that I had learned on all these more elaborate strategies in terms of Medicare and Social Security. All got changed in two paragraphs with this bill. It's absolutely amazing.
And that's why you need continuing education, because you've got to stay on top of this.
Oh, absolutely, because they're always changing laws. And you know, the one thing we know sooner or later, they're going to have to make some adjustments, and it's more likely coming after the next presidential election. So just want to give you a heads up, if there's anything you walk away from here, if you don't have a plan, get one, because you're going to need it to survive retirement. In the meantime, we're out of time here on the program. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, well, we hope you have a pleasant week.
can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.